Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Email todaycb@rte.ie.
The Cerberus heatwave continues to bring extremely hot conditions to southern Europe. Wildfires are raging in Las Palmas and the Canary Islands, with temperatures on Italy's islands of Sicily and Sardinia are expected to reach 48 degrees centigrade this week. It's not just Europe in the grip of dangerous weather conditions, though. In South Korea, at least 40 people have died in flash floods and landslides, while California's Death Valley has seen temperatures of 53 degrees Celsius as 38 cities in the US experienced record temperatures. In a moment, I'll hear what conditions are like today in Spain, Italy and Greece. But first, I'm joined on the line by Professor John Sweeney, climate scientist and emeritus professor at Maynooth University. John, good morning to you.
Good morning, Philip.
As I said, we're about to hear reports from Spain, Italy and Greece. Can you tell us what it is that we're about to hear? How much is weather? How much is climate change?
Well, I think if we try and distinguish the two, what we're seeing at the moment are simultaneous extreme events around the globe. And we had a similar heat wave last year where we tried to disentangle the natural from the artificial. And the study that was done then suggested that heat waves of this type were 100 times, more than 100 times more probable as a consequence of what we've done to the atmosphere. So we're no longer just seeing simply the fingerprints of climate change in these events. We're seeing climate change driving them. And we're seeing, of course, the extremes themselves becoming more intense. We're seeing the heat waves becoming longer. We're seeing the heat dome that becomes established becoming more extensive as a result of climate change. So there's no doubt anymore that we are, in fact, causing these events to become more extreme, more frequent, and more intense as time goes on. That's not in debate. I think what we've seen in the short term here over Europe in the past few weeks has been, I suppose, a mix of the vagaries of the jet stream itself. And that's perhaps related to what's happening around the world as well, where oscillations in the jet stream are influential in causing extremes of either flooding, as you describe, or heat waves in places like China and eastern Japan at the moment. But most interesting, we've heard quite a lot about the events in the United States over the past few days. And that has had a major influence in what we're experiencing in Europe today, because the air from that heat wave has spread into the Arctic. And as it spread into the Arctic and hit those very cold air masses over Greenland and northern Canada, the jet stream has been accentuated and has driven the jet stream further south over Europe, away from that lovely heat wave we had in June, so that it's now plonked right over us and bringing over depression after depression into Ireland and the UK and much of Western Europe, while fostering even more the anticyclones that have developed over that warm Mediterranean zone. So we're seeing, if you like, a combination of short-term events which have been accentuated by climate change and the kind of longer-term changes that the climate change itself is going to bring to us in the future.
And John, those who are doubtful that this is climate change causing say that it's actually being driven now by the El Niño event. Is it possible, again, to disentangle El Niño from climate change and from weather?
Well, El Niño at the moment is only just getting warmed up in the Pacific. It's only just developing. And it has a marginal effect on what happens in Europe. We're so far away. It's very influential in the Pacific and in many parts of the Indian Ocean. But we can't really attribute anything what we've seen this summer to a major El Niño influence. I think we have to accept that what we're seeing here is simply a combination of a small natural change, but a major driver caused by what we've done to the atmosphere. The attribution studies I mentioned, what they do is interesting. They take a model and run it 100 times without CO2 at current levels in the atmosphere, pre-industrial levels, and then run it 100 times or more with current levels and say, how much more likely is a heat wave of this magnitude to occur under present conditions as opposed to natural conditions. And that's where you get this probability of 100 coming out and more, which really puts a lid on any kind of contrary hypothesis that what we're seeing is natural.
Now, one more question before I head to our reporters in Greece, Italy and Spain, and that is the disconnect that people might have in their heads listening to these reports and then thinking about the constant downpours that we have been experiencing here and thinking these are just two totally different stories. But are they in fact a part of the same narrative?
They are indeed. As I've hinted already, it depends which side of that jet stream aberration you're on. If you're to the north of it, as we are at the moment, then you're getting that low pressure feeding in from the Atlantic, from a very warm Atlantic as well at the moment. And that also applies to places like Korea, where we've had floods in Korea, but we're experiencing a heat wave, a very bad heat wave in eastern Japan. So it really is dependent on which side you're on. And of course, for the individuals in the Mediterranean area, on the southern side, that heat dome is hitting air, which is bringing air from high up, compressing it down to the surface, and it's hitting dry ground, ground which has already been desiccated from the heat waves in April and May in parts of Spain and France. So there's no water to evaporate, so it just simply sits there and warms up even more as time goes on. Very different from here, where we have, of course, a week of rain lying at the surface. So if we were to get high pressure tomorrow, it would be evaporating that rain and helping cool us down a little rather than warm us up, as is happening in the Mediterranean today.
But it just depends on what side of this division in the jet stream you're on, as you say, whether you're north or you're south of it at the moment. Stay with us, John, because there will be more questions arising from what we're about to hear. I'm going to go first to Italy and to Angela Giuffrida, the Guardian's Rome correspondent. What's it like there today, Angela? Is it going to be the day in which the 48.8 degrees centigrade record set last year is broken?
Good morning, and thank you for inviting me on. So Tuesday will be the peak day. We're looking at getting up to maybe 43 degrees in Rome, and possibly around 47, 48 in areas of Sardinia, Puglia, and Sicily. So tomorrow is set to be the hottest day. That will continue then towards the end of the week. We might get a bit of a break towards the end of the week, but most likely that will be in the north. And it's looking like Italy's central and southern regions will stay very warm until the end of July, at least.
There have been heat-related deaths reported already.
There have. There was one last week in Milan, and that was of a road worker. If we look back to 2022, Italy had one of the high, I think it was the highest in Europe, of heat-related deaths too.
And what are the authorities doing? What are they encouraging people to do during this week?
Well, we've had the health ministry has put 16 cities on red alert, and that's essentially a warning saying that the temperatures are so high, it could be damaging to the health of the entire population, so not just elderly people and children. Other than that, you know, it's the advice mainly coming from doctors, experts, saying to keep well hydrated, you know, eat fruit and vegetables. Don't skip, you know, cut down on coffee and alcohol, that kind of thing. You know, don't be directly under the sun during the day, wear light clothing. Apart from that, there isn't that much of a strategy from the Italian government in terms of how to tackle this or the effects of climate change going forward.
Okay. I'm also joined by Antti Karasava, the London Times correspondent in Athens. How hot is it today, Antti?
Well, we're seeing some kind of respite. The temperatures have dipped a bit, well down, well beneath those 40 degrees marks. But again, authorities are bracing for an even more vicious heat wave that's about to grip the country later on this week. This respite has allowed leading landmarks like the Acropolis to open its gates yet again to tourists to flow in. But because of these gale force winds that have now whipped up, in addition to the heat that we saw, authorities remain on high alert, especially civil protection authorities, forest rangers, firefighters, even the military, for fear of brush fires sparking across the country. I understand that at least 46 just broke out in the last 24 hours. All of them are under control, but because of these very strong winds sweeping the country, firefighters remain deployed in the areas where fires have been extinguished for fear of flare-ups. But again, Monday's, this drop that we're seeing today is just ahead of yet another, heat wave that is going to be more vicious, and where forecasts predict temperatures to rise well over 44 degrees Celsius. And for Athens, which is a very densely populated city, where half the population of 11 million reside, these temperatures that we're feeling, the temperature may read 40 plus degrees, but, pavements, for example, read like 80 degrees. And because of the the heat and the sun kind of bouncing off these concrete structures, it's asphyxiating.
Indeed, I would imagine that it is. Is there any sign of there being an impact on the tourist industry, of people saying, no, do you know what, that's just too hot for me, I'm not going to go?
Not really. I mean, tourists actually love it here. And, Athens, for starters, is just a stop. Usually most of them head off to the islands, and many of them are just heading straight to the beaches and keeping by the beaches and keeping cool as possible. But there have been, tourists who have ventured off to these archaeological sites only to feel fainty, and some of them actually collapsing. And that's why we have authorities there at popular kind of landmarks and sites, erecting these shades and shaded areas, propping up cooling systems across these the capital. And also the Red Cross has been called in to distribute free bottles of water to these people. But when you're on holiday and it's a once in a lifetime kind of experience to see these amazing sites, few people are going to be warded off.
Indeed. Okay. Anthony, thank you very much. I'm joined also by Isabel Moreno, meteorologist in Spain. How hot is it now, Isabel?
Right now, here in Madrid, outside is 27 degrees, more or less. And during all the night, we have not gone under 22 degrees. So this night has been really, really difficult for a lot of people here in Madrid, and also a lot of people in Spain, because we are having really hot nights.
And what is the humidity like?
Sorry, can you repeat? I didn't hear you very well.
The humidity. How much moisture is there in the air?
I don't know if you're going to believe me, but I don't really know the humidity we have right now outside in Madrid. I had to look for it, sorry.
Well, okay, I can partly answer the question. I was in Catalonia for work myself 2 weeks ago, and it was at 65% humidity. So you put the two together, the heat and the humidity, it makes the conditions very, very hard for people.
That's it. And also all the places that are near the beach are really, really difficult to face the heat, because you have really high temperatures and also a really hot Mediterranean water. So during the night, it's really, really hot. And during the days, even if you don't reach 36 or 40 degrees, those are temperatures that are being reached in other parts of Spain. But I mean, even if you have only 30 degrees, as the humidity is really, really high, the sensation is really bad for the people. And also it's very, very bad for our health.
Indeed. Isabel Moreno in Madrid, thank you very much. John Sweeney is still with us. John, obviously Ireland is never in any lifetime of anybody listening to this programme going to experience anything like this. But there is a very interesting report that was published by the world's leading science journal, Nature, very recently, which points to the number, the relative number of days that urban centres in Ireland are going to experience a need for cooling demand.
Yes, that's right. We know that during the heat wave in June, for example, air conditioning systems were flying out of the stores in a way that they hadn't really for a long time. And yes, it's true that as our temperature increases, we will see an increase in demand for those. But it's coming from a relatively low base. And I don't think we need to concern ourselves too much with a really massive change there in the way that many African countries and many southern European countries will. Mm. We're very lucky in the sense that we're protected from the really extremes of 40 plus by the surrounding ocean. And it will take some years, maybe decades, for us to get up into that level of temperature increase.
Indeed, but it does point to something interesting, though, doesn't it? That we have built our houses to retain heat, and that maybe in decades to come, a long time from now, but in decades to come, we're going to start to need to redesign the typical Irish house to do different things, to adapt to different circumstances.
We are. We're lucky if we do insulate our houses, it keeps the heat out as well as keeping the heat in these heat wave conditions. But certainly our towns and cities are going to perhaps think a little more in planning for adaptation to heat hot conditions, more in the way of greenery. And it was one of the nature restoration laws requirements that cities would start having 20% canopy cover to protect from heat in the future. So there are changes required, and it is important also because this is a silent killer. And going back to your previous question, 60,000 people plus died prematurely in Europe last year from heat wave conditions. Mm. Now, we in Ireland are lucky in that the work that has been done here, and I did it many years ago, show that Irish people tend to react to heat at lower temperature levels than our European counterparts. We're not as acclimatized as they are to heat wave conditions. So we begin to see extra mortality occurring at levels below 20 degrees centigrade on average. So that means we do have to think about it in terms of how we alert people, how we plan for the vulnerable populations to be encouraged to stay indoors, for people, for example, with blood pressure problems or diabetes to be looked after a little more in heat wave conditions in Ireland in the future. We're not immune, in other words, from what happens elsewhere, and we may have to start some forward planning because our grid, for example, may well have to handle more in the way of demand in the summer months from air conditioning than it does at present.
Indeed, I see that figure, 68,000 extra deaths due to heat last year, and projected to rise to over 100,000 by the end of the century. Professor John Sweeney, thank you very much. Coming up after the break, from single-use surgical devices to uniforms, we're going to take a closer look at the waste that healthcare generates in this country.
Text 51551 today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.